CBSI and the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, to look very closely at Ethiopia, the obvious civil war and the obvious carnage caused by months and months of conflict between what appears to be the central government in Addis Ababa, led by Prime Minister Abiy, and a rebel, rebellious, disordered group called the Tigray Popular Liberation Front that dates back to the previous era when the Tigray Popular Liberation Front described the government of Ethiopia. But this is a fragmented country with what The Economist reports is more than 80 ethnic identities. And so it is not easy to generalize. I will be very careful then in saying that The Economist editorial leader calls for both sides to negotiate and calls for both sides to back off in what appears to be an offensive directed at the capital, Addis Ababa, by elements of the Tigray Popular Liberation Front. Gregory, I go no further into this conflict because I've never been to Ethiopia. It's a very far away land. However, you have explained over many months that Ethiopia's success is part of the success of the Horn of Africa, if that is to come about. And right now, it would appear that the African Union and the European observers and the United States are standing back but seeking to negotiate between Prime Minister Abiy and whoever represents the Tigray Popular Liberation Front. Is this a battle for zero? Is this a zero-sum battle? In other words, one side must win, the other side must lose, or are they looking for a resolution that would include both sides in the future? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, we've become too accustomed in the age of the United Nations to ensure that there are no winners and losers. So we have, quote, peacekeeping operations, conflict resolution operations, which put the lid on conflicts in regions without resolving them. And if we do not see a resolution to this crisis in Ethiopia, then it will continue indefinitely. So, yes, one side has to win and one side has to lose. Now, the obvious answer is that the TPLF itself will have to lose because the province of Tigray represents about 6% of the Ethiopian population, and the Tigray Popular Liberation Front, an extremist, I should say, extremist, genocidal Marxist group, does not represent even a fraction of that 6% of the Ethiopian population. So we've got a rebel group which has enormous funding and money because it took over with the basic support of the United States with the collapse of the Derg communist government in 1990-1991, and they have grown and seized vast amounts of money in the interim. Now, their own government collapsed in 2018, and they went back to the bush and took their bat and ball with them. The reality was that they were harboring a renewed takeover of the government, and this is what they're attempting now. And the government, the post-Marxist government, has been resisting. Not very well, however, because the post-Tigray-dominated government was an Oromo-dominated government under Dr. Abiy, who headed an Oromo political party before he formed a national party, the Prosperity Party. But the reality is that Dr. Abiy has been reluctant to stop the excesses of the Oromo Liberation Front and the Oromo Liberation Army, which is now totally in league with the TPLF because the Oromo Liberation Army is itself an extremist Marxist group, and they, with the TPLF, have been engaging for the last couple of years in specifically genocidal actions against Amhara people and against anybody who calls themselves Ethiopian because they want to break up Ethiopia and take small regional areas for themselves as dictatorships. Now, the TPLF militia is not a ragtag bunch at all. They had a 30,000 strong militia armed and trained by the United States when they were in government. Although the United States did help the National Army, they particularly supported this private political army of the TPLF, much like, if you like, the SS was to Hitler. And they armed it and gave it lots of money, gave American passports to the TPLF leadership. And so this is a massively funded operation with modern weapons. And they're also getting support, as the Oromo groups, from outsiders, particularly the Egyptian government. So we've got this very confused situation now where you've got about seven small and two large terrorist groups now coalescing to fight the federal government. The problem is that Dr. Abiy himself is really an inexperienced leader, and his inexperience is now showing, and he's retreated in a sense into the chewing of khat, this narcotic leaf, which has been very popular among the Muslim areas in Ethiopia, and it induces a sense of well-being and puts you in a bubble, in a sense. So we've had Dr. Abiy not making decisions. And one of the things about Ethiopian culture is that you wait for somebody to give you orders. And if Abiy is not giving orders, nothing's happening. So the result is that the army is growing incredibly unhappy with Dr. Abiy because he hasn't resisted this surge of rebels who've basically run locust-like over the Amhara province and the Afar province. And now these groups are coming closer to Addis Ababa. So I think what we're going to see in the near future is probably a coup d'etat against Abiy. But the reality is that even that's not going to do much unless the post-Abiy government decisively deals with the rebels. And they're going to have to come up with some creative ways to do that. It's possible that they could do it. Theoretically, it's the government is more powerful than the rebels, but they're going to have to show it because Dr. Abiy is not in a position to do so. Because what will happen is win, lose, or draw, there's no good outcome. The Egyptians are pushing for the African Union headquarters to be moved from Addis Ababa to Cairo. Well, frankly, the Egyptians have been the worst offenders at politically manipulating the African Union in the past, and to let the African Union move to Cairo would be the end of the African Union. And even now, the African Union has become meaningless, as have the regional bodies in Africa. Coups have now become back in fashion. Look at the Sudan situation, look at the Guinea situation, look at the change of government in Chad. So essentially, although there'll be extreme outrage expressed if Abiy is overthrown and these genocidal rebels are stopped, the reality is that it will take a long time for Ethiopia to recover from this. But recover it will have to do, because without a stable Ethiopia, we're going to have chaos in the Horn of Africa. We're going to have it as a haven for not only Islamist rebels, but rebels of all kinds. And you'll start to see a resurgence in piracy and disruption in the Red Sea. So it's really a critical thing for world trade. And you have to ask, why is the U.S. State Department standing by on this and supporting the TPLF? And by the way, supporting the TPLF as they did when the TPLF was in government in Ethiopia. And the TPLF has had billions of dollars to play with.
How does this connect, Gregory, to a report that you've given over months about Egypt and Sudan looking to, in some fashion, weaken Ethiopia because of the ostensible reason is the dam that's now been filled three times? Egypt says that it compromises its source of water for the Nile. Sudan military has been used as a tool by Egypt in following your report. Does the TPLF offensive comport with Egypt's idea of disordering Ethiopia?
Yes. The Egyptians have been helping with the Sudanese military to overthrow their own government so that they could be combined with an Egyptian-Sudanese military front to actually invade parts of Ethiopia. Egypt has done this on periodic occasions for the last 200 years against Ethiopia, ostensibly to gain control of the headwaters of the Blue Nile. The reality is that Egypt does have a water problem, and the flow of Nile waters has been consistent and is consistent down to Egypt and Sudan. But the Egyptian population has quadrupled over the last few decades. So naturally, they've got a water shortage. It's not a water shortage, it's a population surplus. And they have no answer to this other than to say, well, it's all Ethiopia's fault, we'll invade Ethiopia. Well, of course, if they do that and they still get no more water because, let's face it, they're killing the goose that laid the golden egg. So at that point, the Egyptian government will have to answer to its people because they need to come up with something more creative about water management than invading Ethiopia. But that's the plan.
Does the TPLF offensive suit Egypt? In other words, if presuming one outcome would be TPLF back in control of Addis Ababa, does that suit Egypt, or would the Egypt seek to undermine the TPLF as well?
Well, it's not just a TPLF offensive. It's TPLF, a Oromo Liberation Front. So they both want to break up Ethiopia, and that suits Egypt down to the ground. And that's why Egypt has been pumping weapons and money and training rebels for years to this outcome. So basically, yes, the whole offensive is to Egypt's apparent wishes. Now, General Sisi thought that this was a crazy idea when he came to office and tried to back off on it, but found that there was so much public pressure in Egypt to solve the water problem that he's been forced to, you know, abandon logic and go along with this populist claim that we must extract more water from Ethiopia.
So what we're looking for then is a near-term resolution of Prime Minister Abe being dislodged from office, either fleeing or being arrested, the army taking control. Is the army capable, armed, weapons ready, in order to repel this offensive by the TPLF?
Yes, the armed forces could do it. They've got a lot of weapon superiority, and the Russians are particularly upgrading the weapons for them, as are the Turks, although being forced to go back into bed with the Turkish government to get weapons has been a difficult thing for the Abiy government to do. But yes, Ethiopia could repel the rebels. They couldn't take on a Sudanese-Egyptian formal military offensive. But then if the rebels are brought under control by Addis Ababa, it's probable that Cairo and Khartoum would back off for the time being.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. He has pointed to the larger story in the Horn of Africa. And when we come back, the Red Sea and the Mediterranean, popularly called the Red Med. What does Ethiopia's breakup, potential breakup or beggaring mean for that critical region? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.